$200 on the MasterTech 7 cubic foot. Blog Talk Radio.
No, no, no. They were looking to get up to that 255, and I can tell you, hope was at the crease, so there was really hope. A young man from Guyana called Kemo Paul batted with a lot of intelligence, and you know what? The West Indies went on to win, and I'm sure from Kingston in Jamaica to Blackrock in Barbados, we're celebrating the victory. Yes, indeed. It was a good victory for the West Indies, having lost the first ODI and all to play for in the third one that starts Friday night, our time. It was a very good performance by Shea Hope. 144 balls, 12 fours and three sixes. And this really represents a very good performance from him. And I'm sure he must have been an extremely happy man. And all of Barbados, where he comes from, and of course, throughout the Caribbean, it was a good victory. Of course, we're going to be looking at that this evening. You know, when the West Indies win, we must celebrate. We've had so many in the last couple of years, things are not going well for the West Indies. We need to celebrate whenever they win. Now, some other news we heard, and it was said a long time ago, sure, that Richard Pybus is taking over. We're going to try to get some confirmation on that a little bit later on the show. In fact, only a couple of weeks ago, we heard that Steve Portas was the man to take charge. In fact, he is currently the interim head coach. He's in Bangladesh with the side. But the Cricket West Indies met on the weekend, and it is my understanding that Pybus, who we know very well, he's been associated with West Indies cricket for some time, actually has been appointed interim head coach. I understand that it may very well go to the World Cup. I hope this evening to get some confirmation on that. Now, we had the regional series starting, of course, with some good victories for the Leewards Hurricanes against the Barbados Pride and the defending champions. They look so good indeed. You're talking, of course, of the Jaguars. They went to St. Lucia and they won against the Volcanoes. And I think you expect them to have a very good performance. Able leader in Leon Johnson, and no doubt he's got a good side as well. The Hurricanes, they're home to the defending champions. That game starts on Thursday, and we're hoping that we're going to get a lot of interest in that game, and of course in the other matches that are going to be taking place. Good evening to you, I'm Andrew Mason, and of course from now until 8 o'clock Eastern Caribbean time, we are on Mason and Guests. And Dr. Ford is with me. We hope to be joined by Jamal Warrican, who would have gone to Bangladesh. We hope to have him in the studios, and also as well Jamal Smith. Doc, your smile is as broad as Bangladesh. How are you, my friend? You must be quite a happy man. I saw you in the chat talking about hope must stay in there. I was watching what I was listening. Yeah. And of course, it was a good victory.
Yeah, it's good that we had, you know, a positive result here for a change. The maturity of hope to guide the team to the victory in the end, a run a ball, just over a run a ball, 146 not out, which is a significant innings. And I hope it will really help him to mature and develop as a player. And he had some assistance from Paul at the end. You know, the batting hasn't clicked, but when you have Ralston Chase coming in at number 7 and then Paul coming in at 8, the batting is very deep on paper, but the performance of a lot of the top batsmen has left a lot to be desired. The bowling hasn't been too bad. We're still seeing O'Shane Thomas being penetrative, even though a little expensive, but he's young in the game. Bishu was very, very economical, just 1 for 27. But
that's good.
All in all, you know, to chase a score that's a decent score over 250 is something that we haven't seen recently. But for the World Cup, we know different surface, but we'll have to be going towards 300 scores and learning to contain teams under 300 and also to be able to chase to that level as well.
Indeed. Interesting comments coming from the new captain. I don't know if you heard him, Rodman Paul, and he spoke very highly of Shea Hope.
Yeah, definitely. He knows that Hope really bailed him out, because the captain meant to hit one down the ground and ended up hitting it to mid on in the air. So he must have been pretty disappointed. But, you know, a captain is really as good as his squad, and you can have all the tactical acumen possible, but you do need support from your 10 players, and I hope that you know whatever team we put on the park, they'd bind together and work as a unit towards the greater good.
What does this mean, Doc, to West Indians? I mean, when we win, I mean, we've been losing so much. How do you feel tonight?
Well, I do feel better. I mean, we're playing a team that we've historically dominated, so we've been quite down recently. And I think we're kind of, every time you think we've reached the bottom, I think this is one of our real low points, coming to Bangladesh and losing the test series so comprehensively. And then the first one there in the manner in which we did, with a total batting failure. But it does show that there is something left in the tank. And, you know, we have to really build now with the youngsters. I've said that a lot, but definitely the guys must try to improve. But showing that they can go to a foreign country and to spin friendly conditions and do well, even though this wicket, the ball was coming on a lot more. It gives us something to ruminate on that's positive.
Indeed. Well, of course, we're going to be making our rounds across the Caribbean. We're going to start in Barbados and talk to Ian Bradshaw, the former West Indies all-rounder. Hello, good evening to you, Ian. How are you?
Hi, Andrew. Good evening to you, and good evening to all your guests.
Indeed. Well,
good evening.
The performance of the West Indies side, you must be quite happy, particularly with the batting of Shea Hope.
Yes, she batted well and brought us a much-needed victory. Certainly for all West Indies fans like us, we're pleased when West Indies do well. We've been suffering a little bit on this tour, so it's quite refreshing to see that West Indies have just won a game.
Yes, let's talk about Shea Hope. I'm sure you know him pretty well. How good is Shea Hope as a batsman in your view?
I think Shea Hope is quite a talented young man. He possesses all of the skills to score runs at the highest level. Technically, he's very sound. And he has a pretty wide range of shots. And if you want to play international cricket, you need to be able to score in multiple areas. And guys can work out pretty quickly. So Shea has been improving. He's certainly far too consistent for the talent that he's possessed and the experience that he's picked up by now, because we must realize that Shea has been around for 2 years or so, maybe even more. So he can no longer be said to be a man fresh on the scene. And we have to hold him to a higher standard now. So it's pleased that you see innings such as the quality that we saw here. We also had a good innings or two from him in India. So it speaks volumes from a West Indies standpoint, because it's important going into a World Cup that we get more of those top order solutions solved.
Yes, of course, we're going to be looking at that World Cup squad. And I think we can look at it pretty soon. Of course, you've got England coming. But let's look at the game. Of course, 185 for 6 at one stage, the West Indies in the 39th over. Young man called Kemo Paul from Guyana came and stayed with Hope. He made 18 from 31 balls, but he stopped that little slide in the middle. And he must also be given some credit for his batting.
Certainly. It's always good to see guys that have come out of a winning culture being involved in West Indies cricket. You remember Kemo Paul from the 19 days, yeah, doing quite well, mm-hmm, along with his Het Myers. So these guys have experienced success before coming out of Guyana. And you must give a lot of praise to what's happening down in Guyana. They have been doing quite well over the last couple of years in all formats of the game, whether it be first class or T20. And that habit of winning is what you want to take forward with you. And certainly, Kemo Paul seems to be one who isn't scared of a challenge. And he, even his bowling, even though it's still obviously going through a learning curve, you can see that he's always wanting to make something happen. So I'm pleased for him. Obviously, as I said, very pleased for the rest of his team. They've been having a very hard time of it. And we need to turn our fortunes soon, because we have some very important series coming up next year. England here in the Caribbean is a very, very big tour. And straight on from that, we go into the World Cup later on in the year. So it's a very big year for West Indies cricket, and you need to start the momentum from now.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, good night. What do you think about the construct of the team now with Chase coming in at number 7? Do you think this is a formula we can take to the UK, or do you think this is just a solution for this tour?
Well, you have to appreciate that going into the World Cup, there'll be different conditions. Actually, in Bangladesh, if the conditions offer a bit more to the spin bowlers, you probably understand how Chase, as a spinning all-rounder, playing alongside Bishu, is a combination that we will try for this game. But as we go into the World Cup, where I believe that conditions may not be as conducive to spin, we may have to have the bowling all-rounders such as the Jason Holder filling those type of positions. So it's good that Chase has given me opportunity, but I'm not too certain if Chase at number 7 will be the solution going into the World Cup.
But thinking about the interim captain, Powell, you did mention Holder, and also Russell may be available if he's fit. Do you think we can have 3 all-rounders in a squad for the World Cup, or will we have to choose between those 2 of those 3?
Well, if you have the players of the caliber of a Jason Holder,
right,
and Andre Russell, mm-hmm, I believe that those 2 feature in most teams.
Mm-hmm.
They have 2 persons of that caliber. So I certainly would imagine that if both are fit and both available, both of them would play. Rather we stick with Powell, he's captain this tour, but that doesn't give you any guarantee that he'll make the team going forward. He has to perform a lot better and far more consistently. So I can see a middle order with the likes of Hetmyer, Holder, Russell. We have Samuels around there right now, maybe with Bravo. We have to determine on form if both of them can make the team, because when you go into the World Cup, you can't play names. You need to play form. And it's going to be important that we pick our form players going into the World Cup.
Talking about names and form, we have a name, Samuels, who's been out of form for the whole subcontinent tour. And we also have a Gale who hasn't played any 50-over cricket for a while, and with England coming. Do you think that the selectors can be brave enough to use the results of the England 50-over series to finally cement the squad, and if necessary, dispense with some of the more mature players?
We have to make those hard calls. If there's that we believe that they don't make our best setup, we've not been doing well with a number of these names. We have to admit the fact that in all 3 formats, 50-over cricket has been our worst, and certainly some hard decisions will have to be made. Samuels has not done well recently. I don't think Samuels plays enough cricket, so he has to find ways of getting form and not trying to find form on tour. And if those opportunities are presenting themselves, then the selectors may have to determine that maybe Samuels is not one to move forward. I'm not saying write him off at this stage, but I'm saying that by the time we get through the England series, there should be no doubt who our core squad should be.
I want to talk a little bit about this youngster, O'Shane Thomas. Pretty sharp. You had him, of course, bowling with Roach, Kimo Paul, Bishu. Paul also had a bowl as well. What's your view on young Thomas from Jamaica?
I'm excited about Thomas. I would like to see Thomas and probably someone like Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
I know that like Gabriel, because of his fitness, seems to play a test, and then we can't see him having available for the one days,
mm-hmm,
so forth. But I believe that Gabriel has been our most impactful bowler in recent times. And I would like to see Gabriel along with Thomas, those guys being around that 16 or 17 persons that we narrowed down as we go into the World Cup. The World Cup will be played on with some very good batting conditions. We've seen that in England recently. And it's important that West Indies find wicket-taking options. And we've struggled sometimes in getting wickets in one days. And it's going to be important that persons like Thomas and Gabriel complement the seam of Roche and Holder.
Do you like the idea of the selectors playing O'Shane Thomas only in ODIs? Because there's a view that he's got the pace, and perhaps you may consider playing in terms of Test cricket. You've got Roach, you've got Paul playing as well, Gabe will come back. Do you like the idea for the moment?
I'm not sure how much success he's had in the four-day arena. It doesn't ring any bells to me that he's done particularly well. So that is something that has to be investigated. Is he fit enough? Is he strong enough? And he looks like a big, strong guy.
Yep.
But sometimes when you're talking about bowling four spells in a day and bowling at top pace, he might not have yet built up that strength to do that. And that may come in time because he's still a very young man. We see him and we assume a lot out of him, but he's still a young man. And if those close to the cricket, we've seen a lot more of him. I haven't seen him play a lot of first class cricket. If those around him feel that maybe to expose him into international cricket in truly the white ball and let him understand what international cricket is all about, and then maybe in a year or so time, we have him to partner with Gabriel along with someone like Azari Joseph, who he came on the scene very, very early. Mm-hmm. But as a very young man playing national cricket, it's hard on your body. So we saw what happened with Azari. So we wanted to make sure that these guys are ready to bowl those hard spells in Test cricket, because we then become some of their harshest critics when they're not ready for the cricket, and then we push them and then they disappoint. If you look at what someone like a Pat Cummins and what Australia did with him, I think that should be a model for a lot of the administrators dealing with fast bowlers. Yes, he got hurt, but here Australia realized this was an unbelievable talent, and they stuck with him and made sure that his strength and his body was ready for the rigors of Test cricket. And now you've seen him play, I guess, over the last year and a half, and he's probably one of Australia's most consistent fast bowler. But that is because of the work that he's. I think we need to manage our fast bowlers a lot better. We can have a situation where we have our fast bowlers, we get excited about them, and as soon as they don't perform as we like, we find that we throw them back down into the regional game and forget about them.
No, let's talk a bit now about young Hetmer from Guyana. So far he's done pretty well. What do you like about Hetmer?
Well, he's prepared to take on the bowling. He is the one guy who always seems to score at over around a ball. He wouldn't come off every single game. But if you look at the construct of your team that you're trying to put together, it's important that you have a Hetmer up there along with a Hope and a Bravo, because even though that those two guys are, I guess, one of your steadier batsmen, you know, technically they're a lot better, they don't always score very fast. And so it's important that you have someone like a Hetmer who can sometimes take the pressure off of some of these players. Sometimes Hetmer might get 100 and win the game by himself. Sometimes he might only require a 40 from Hetmer, but the timing of that 40 may come at a time that takes the pressure off of a Hope, off of a Bravo, and allow them to get the big 100, and it sets up a win for you. So Hetmer has a very important role to play in our cricket. I think that the international world have seen his talent, and he seems to have the respect of the opposition, because the opposition sees him and they kind of back off. He's not in India quite a bit. When he came to bat, the opposition backed off, and it's going to be very important that we have that. We used to have that with Gill. Obviously, approaching 40 will not give you that consistently. And if we're going into a World Cup, we need to have those threats throw our order. And we could be a very dangerous team.
Mm-hmm. And Robin Paul as captain, does that surprise you?
It did. I don't know if that was something that was that had been looked at prior to these series. He had been identified within the group as a leader. And then for consistency, why to give him the opportunity in a short tour. In terms of persons that can lead, naturally you would have felt that Carlos Graffitt could have been someone that could have led the team. But maybe when they figured that was such a short tour, and if Carlos played, it might have meant that someone like a Paul might have missed out,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
because you can only play 11. So maybe you look at it, the construct of your team, you say, well, it might not be best for the team for someone like a Carlos to lead, and you entrust it to someone that you had already identified as a possible leader. So I don't think it's by any means, or I stress imagination, a long-term decision that he will captain going forward. He's been identified, he's been encouraged, and we hope that maybe the responsibility sparks in him an improved performance.
Just before you go, Ian, always good to have you on the show. Let's turn to the regional scene now. Barbados Pride up against the Hurricanes. It was a victory for the Hurricanes. Where did Barbados go wrong?
Oh well, we just didn't bat very well. It seems as though we got some starts here and there, but first class cricket, you need to buckle down.
Mm-hmm.
And score some runs. I must say, I didn't watch the game. I could only hear it,
mm-hmm,
over the radio. But it seems as though that the Leeward Islands,
mm-hmm,
they had a very balanced attack.
Yep.
Good seamers and a good range of spinners. And they obviously were able to keep our batsmen under pressure for a sustained period of time. And I keep saying this all the time. You're taking guys coming out of first division cricket, or elite, as you call it right now,
mm-hmm,
and you don't see a lot of guys batting through a whole elite day. It's going to ask a lot for a guy now to bat through a whole first class day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's a worrying thing for me. I remember, and you will recall, Andrew,
mm-hmm,
there are days in the past where you had guys that offered number three, first division, they would bat the entire day.
Mm-hmm.
You hardly see that now, where guys just set the stall out, conditions good, they're going to bat the entire day. So batting is a concern for me from a Barbados standpoint. Not going to get too much into the names and so forth on this occasion. But all I will say is that I want Shamar Brooks and Jonathan Carter in particular, if you're looking at a Barbados perspective, to understand you have to seize the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You have a massive tour coming up right now with England, a massive tour.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell yourself, first test match is in Barbados. You want to play that first test because you're playing a test like that on a historic ground. It can change your life. Look at Shea Hope. Shea Hope was, we said he had talent, he was okay. But it wasn't until Shea Hope scored those 200s at Headingley, mm-hmm, against England that it changed the whole complexion of how people viewed Shea Hope.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you gotta understand in your career where the key points where you can seize the moment. And I would hope that these two young men, if you look wider than that, some of the guys that are still here, Johnson, that's been knocking around for a while. If these guys really want to step up, they got to realize that a tour like this is where you want to make a name for yourself and have a sustained play within West Indies cricket.
My final question to you, Ian. I understand that you have been offered a job as chairman of selectors in Barbados. Is that true? And I've spoken to you?
Andrew, I have been asked for years by persons to consider cap to be a selector in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you this. I'll say it openly. If you're playing cricket as I currently do, you can't possibly consider being a selector. You have to be fair to the persons that you're going to choose. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, because I'm still active,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't see myself committing to the ASC letter. Mm-hmm. I do believe that there are other roles that need to be filled within the Barbados cricket structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that myself and a number of the former players are more than happy to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that the BCA opens their mind to how they can be greater participation of former players to move the cricket forward. The cricket is the selection process to me is just one of many things that we need to do to get Barbados back on track. So the key to that is utilizing a lot of the rich resources we've had,
mm-hmm.
And getting those young players actively engaging with some of these guys who've gone before. And that would make the world a difference.
Yeah, but besides being hearing that you're the new chairman, so I would imagine someone might have spoken to you. Anyone from the BCA has spoken to you about that new role?
Well, I told you, Andrew, what my position is. So if you hear any announcement that is contrary to that,
mm-hmm.
you would then have to ask a question.
Mm. Okay, so no one has really spoken to you about that matter then. All right, well, we can leave it there then, Ian?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can, Andrew.
You don't sound as convincing as in your early presentation, though.
No, but as I said, Andrew, what I have told you, I can assure you, I've told many.
Okay.
And I always look forward to mm-hmm. helping Barbados however I can.
Right.
But Ian, how can the selection process be improved? I mean, in
mm-hmm.
short answer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, what we have to do is to have a better identification of talent. And identify it in a manner that it stretches further than where we currently choose right now. I think our selection pool is too narrow. And you have so many guys over there probably on the 19 level, on the 17 level, guys that may not have necessarily broken through the school system for whatever reason. And we all know of individuals would have had talent, but for reasons other than their cricket, it didn't allow them to prosper like some of the others. We have to identify a number of those guys a lot earlier and put them in programs where they can get the benefit of hearing from persons who've done this in the past and working outside the coaches. I just think right now we are sticking far too much to the persons who would have come through this so-called system, and we definitely need to look wider than that based on the realities of our current society.
Ian, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. It's been a wonderful discussion as usual. And maybe the next time we talk to you, you'll be the chairman. Thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us, Ian Bradshaw.
Good night to all.
Good night to all, okay? Always a very measured performance from Ian Bradshaw, the former West Indies All-Rounder. We're going to pause for business calls when we come back. We're going to be talking to someone who was there in Bangladesh, Jamel Warrican. Mason, the guest is...
Share as well, construct the innings very well, but very very importantly, he back worked through the innings,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So therefore he was able to see West Indies home, and well done to the team.
Mm-hmm. And Jamel, I'm sure you've got the same sentiments, a tremendous performance.
Yes, I'm obviously elated that the West Indies have finally won a game on Bangladeshi soil, and obviously they can at least walk away with their series.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Che Hope, though. I mean, what do you make of him? You are an analyst now at the regional level, and I imagine you'll be at the international level soon. Talk to me about Che Hope as a batsman.
I was making a point today in the cricket forum that I felt like, you know, Che's strike rate generally was a bit poor. Well, I wouldn't say poor would be the word, but I always felt that if he's to win games for the West Indies, a couple of things need to happen. I think he's our most consistent one-day batsman, and his stats will show that. I think averaging just about 44.90, which is phenomenal for the young man. But, you know, there were a couple of innings that I can remember, especially the drawn game as well, where it just felt like he didn't kick on. But today, you saw a man that was learning from the lessons presented to him earlier, and he was very focused, and he utilized the scoring areas very well coming on to the end of the innings, and he was able to close out the game. And this obviously augurs well for the West Indies team, but a couple of things need to happen as well. He really needs to be partnered if he's to remain at the top by someone who may be a little more explosive. Puran especially comes to mind if Evan Lewis is not in form or in the limelight. We'll definitely need to do something about our number 3 and 4 as well because Young Hep Meyer, as we know, who throws caution to the wind, he came in today and he showed signs of what obviously he's capable of, but obviously are falling to the sword, and he's that type of player. But Shea will probably need a number 3 and a number 4. And right now, Darren Bravo and Marlon Samuels, especially Samuels in particular, just batting a little too many balls. Shea is already the batsman, really, that looks to set his stall for a score, obviously, and for his team. But I feel if this one-day team is to do well, we'll have to probably rejig the man at the top. And either or we have to say to Mr. Samuels and Mr. Bravo, they need to get on with the show, because I noticed over a period of time, Marlon Samuels especially bats a lot of dot balls, and that obviously will create pressure on Che Hope. I was even saying today it's probably a little disastrous when the two come together, but luckily for us, the nature of the surface today and the way how they have truly Bangladeshi bowlers, I always felt confident that we would have won, but there'll be situations where we'll probably be chasing 280, 290, where that partnership in particular between Samuels and Che Hope will not be acceptable. So these are just the final points that we have to look at as we go towards the World Cup. But very well played to the young man again. And as I've said, you know, he's really showing signs that he will be the go-to batsman in the future and in obviously more present times to come.
Now, I want to ask you a bit about Marlon Samuels. In your view, Jamal, going forward, would you pick Marlon Samuels?
Well, I'll say this. I've been a bit of a Marlon Samuels fan over the years, obviously. A very interesting character he is, but at this stage of his career, he certainly cannot be occupying the crease the way that he has. He's basically trying to set his stall up, not rotating his strike, and then trying to make up with some big blows later on in the innings. Obviously, credit to Mr. Samuels again for participating or being a guiding force in the two world titles and respectively T20. But he will have somebody will have to say to Mr. Samuels, you need to shoulder the burden a bit better. You need to change your style, or we will have to do without him.
Do you think he's past his best?
That's a bit difficult to say. I mean, I see glimpses. I see glimpses of him. I see glimpses of a man. Even the game before where he was caught, I have memories of that particular stroke he plays down the ground. He was well caught on the lower boundary. And you know, if he gets off of two or three of those, he really gets into good gear. I wouldn't say he's not at he's past his best, but as I said before, he really needs to rethink how he goes about his innings, especially with the young hopes and Hepmeyer's around. He needs to more than set the example. He needs really to be part of the guiding light as opposed to being a problem at this juncture.
Interesting comments coming. Of course, you can call us at 4341-790 and get involved in the program. If you're calling from overseas, 1246. We want to say hello to all of our listeners across the Caribbean, of course, live in Antigua and the ABS. We want to say hello to our friends at Real FM in Grenada, of course, W Vent there in St. Lucia, all across the world. We want to say hello to you and welcome to Mason and Guest. Well, Jamal Warrican, you, of course, went to Bangladesh and the West Indies played two test matches and they lost. When you do an assessment of the West Indies player in the test series in Bangladesh, where did the West Indies go wrong in your view?
I'm going to start with the first test match. I think in the first innings when Bangladesh was batting, we dropped too many chances, allowed them to score over 200 runs. So therefore, if we take our opportunities a lot earlier, we'd be going into the game. Also, when we batted, in the second innings of our in the game. We didn't bat good at all. A total of just 200 runs to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was very it was a good total for us to chase down. It wasn't out of reach, but once again, the batsman didn't stayed up and stuck well.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best phrase to use? The batsman just didn't put a hand up.
Didn't put a hand up.
Batted to win the game. Mm-hmm. So that's a disappointment.
Well, that's a batter like you, because you got 41 in one of the test matches.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, what a performance.
Thank you, Andrew.
What were you doing so right?
I think it's just being positive, waiting until the ball comes into my zone.
Mm.
And once it's in my zone, strike as good as I can.
And you're getting stronger too. You seem to be losing some weight.
Yeah, in the gym.
Did that happen in Bangladesh right now? It started the way, sir.
Preparation started at home.
In your private gym. Indeed.
Yeah, but I just thought that in both test matches, it wasn't positive enough. Only person I could say that took the attack to the bowlers was Ati and some. Mm. Even Shane at times.
Right.
So that same batsman is more positive and believe in himself more and commit to taking the aggression to the Bangladeshi bowlers, things will be a lot different.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's an interesting point. Fazir Muhammad is on the line. It's always good to have him. But just before we go to Fazir, tell us about this young Sahet Mar. We heard, of course, from Ian Bradshaw. He's saying that he's fearless. And at some stages, you know, the innings backed away. How good, in your view, play with Sahet Mar? What about this young man?
I think he is very talented in all aspects, in terms of test cricket, one day cricket, T20.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a very, very, very talented batsman. I think he's definitely one for the future.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't want someone to bowl an arrogant here, but I think in my eyes, he is the probably most promising batsman that we have in the West Indies right now.
Mm-hmm.
And just his mindset, his way of thinking, is clear. Cricket and how he approaches this game is just amazing. It brings you a gale.
Okay.
But I think it's just not the striking. When it comes to batting spin, there's not much I could see in the career who could bat spin better than him.
That's an amazing comment, you know, because, I mean, you know, you've had people like Brian Lara playing spin, and some of our best Indian batsmen don't play the spin very well. And that's a big statement to make, that you're saying that Sahet Mar plays spin extremely well.
Yeah, he does. Even when he has ideas, he's like, guys, it don't make sense batting on the pitches that in the nets. Why not bat on the grass? Where
okay.
It's more difficult
okay.
to challenge yourself and his ideas and thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, instead of when the man batting on the pitch, he's going to bat on the grass.
Mm-hmm.
Make it more challenging for himself.
Interesting. Well, of course, Fazir Muhammad was a nene left arm spinner. I could hardly make the Trinidad side. I'm sure that every time Sahet Mar faced you, he'd make 100. How are you, Fazir?
You don't have to rub it in like that. It's absolutely true. People like Shimron Hetmeyer, if they were to face what I used to call bowling, which was really, as you said, mediocre to say the least, that they'd get 100 at least every time.
Mm, indeed. What a victory for there.
Very good victory for the West Indies. And after they were so disappointing in that first ODI, where it seemed as if somebody forgot to tell them that they were playing limited over cricket, you could have Darren Bravo scoring 19 or 51 balls, and Marlon Samuels are almost as slow. You really had to wonder about the West Indies focus. But certainly today, all credit to Shea Hope. And while I take the point about the brilliance of Shimron Hetmeyer, we need to recognize that Shea Hope now has 3 one-day international hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
And he is someone of whom a lot is expected in the coming years. And it really is requiring a lot of him to deliver at the level that is expected. But he delivered today. A tremendous 100, 16 runs of that penultimate over from Mustafi Zur that made all the difference. And this remains alive going into Friday.
Indeed. And you must have some concern about Marlon Samuels.
I've always had concerns about Marlon Samuels because the concern will have to be that whether or not he is really contributing meaningfully to the team. And I know many people will have a lot of lingering sentiment for him, and you could understand why. Because he's always looked that stylish type of player. He's been a man of the match in 2 World T20 finals, so you can never take that away from him, never mind what you say about other issues related to him. But he's a senior man in a team that continues to struggle, and you would expect him, with the vast experience that he has, to really take the lead a lot more effectively than he does. That's why he's lost his place in the test team, because he went through a year and a half of averaging in the teens. And that really couldn't be tolerated. And at this stage, he really needs to show himself in the limited over version if he really wants to have a swan song at next year's World Cup.
Now, for their news broke today with unconfirmed Reds. Ferrer broke the story on VOB. And we carried it long ago here in one of our missing guest shows that Richard Pybus is now the man taking over as the interim coach. Have you heard anything, Fazer? They tend to talk to you.
Well, they talk to you first before they talk to me because they know you're the one who will really have your ears to the ground, and I generally rely on you,
yes,
you know, for that information in many respects. And I actually heard that as well during the course of the weekend. And if that is so, apart from any other issues, it merely reinforces that Cricket West Indies continues to operate like a private club because clearly Richard Pybus is a favorite of the present administration of Cricket West Indies because he's been involved at different levels over the last few years. He left Wales and came back and now is the performance manager in Cricket West Indies. And given all of the different considerations, and I'm not waving any flags that doesn't mean, by the way, but it doesn't automatically mean that if you're an outstanding test cricketer or if you've succeeded in other departments, that you'll succeed in West Indies cricket. We've had so many outstanding individuals leaving in frustration. But the fact that Richard Pybus, who appears to be the one who is now almost destined to be the next West Indies coach, it would just seem to reinforce all of that speculation that it's not about necessarily merit, it's not about creating the right environment, but it's about towing the line, keeping the administrators happy, and always being on the right side.
Hi, Fazer. Two questions. One is, what are the characteristics of Mr. Pybus that would make him such an indispensable individual that you think has been visualized by Cricket West Indies? And secondly, can we sustain having hope on the field for the whole day, wicket keeping and then batting through a whole innings? Is it sustainable for a premier batsman to be the wicket keeper and the batsman in a 50 over squad?
Well, it's happened before. I mean, we just have to think of an Adam Gilchrist, who is arguably the greatest wicketkeeper batsman of all time in all formats of the game. He's been truly outstanding. Geoffrey Dujon didn't open the batting, of course, but it is a fair point because it's a far more hectic schedule these days where you're playing three different formats, where you're traveling extensively, and if you're going to be called upon to do behind the stumps and then open the batting and play the sort of innings that he did today, it will take a toll physically and mentally. So that is something the team setup will have to think about very, very carefully. Do they want to continue that way for the foreseeable future, which means another 2 or 3 years? Will it take a toll on him physically and detract from his contribution, especially as a batsman? So I think that's a fair point. As far as the first question, as to the whole question of Richard Pybus and what he brings to the game, that will certainly have him apparently a favorite of the administration of Cricket West Indies to be a coach. I think he just does their bidding because certainly in the time when Phil Simmons was the coach, and it was a turbulent period when Simmons was coach, you'll recall he was suspended after just a few weeks because he talked about outside influence on the selection of the team. And then a year later, he was subsequently fired because, again, he came at loggerheads. And my understanding is that whenever it came down to meetings and meetings with the board and different elements and individuals within the structure of West Indies cricket, Richard Pybus was someone who was involved for some far too closely and was almost seen as an individual who might be overstepping his bounds based on what he might have been recommending and so on. So in that regard, it didn't appear that he saddled at all with Phil Simmons, and at the end of it all, Simmons was the one to go, and Richard Pybus was the one to stay.
Interesting. Now, for that, let's turn our attention now to England. Of course, they've named their squad Root, Ali, Anderson, Bairstow, of course, Broad, Burns, Butler, Curran, Denley, Fawkes, Jennings, Kumar, Rashid, Stokes, Stone, and Walks. And Walks, sorry, Chris Walks. Now, when we look at that side, any surprises?
No surprises, because it is the same squad that has just come away from Sri Lanka with a 3-0 series triumph. And I think these selectors are quite right to show faith in all those individuals, not just because of the success, but also because they're probably anticipating that the West will not have the same sort of greenish pitches
right.
that we had for the home series against Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, because you've got the likes of Mark Wood, James Anderson, Stuart Broad and company who can fight fire with fire if the West Indies are inclined to go the way of juicy steaming pitches for those test matches. So the retention of that very success to come away from Sri Lanka winning 3-0, that isn't surprising at all.
Indeed, and of course, we're going to be having them coming very, very soon. Although they're saying in England that Joe Denley was a little lucky to have kept his place.
That might be so, but I think what they are also looking at is to try to give players a fair opportunity. And while we may talk about England being favourites, and they will be favourites coming into this series, let's not forget, gentlemen, that even in the very worst of times, which is what West Indies have been experiencing over the last 22 years in Test cricket,
mm-hmm.
England only have one Test series victory over the last 44 years and 9 tours to the Caribbean. That
mm-hmm.
was in 2004 when they won 3-0. In 2009, they were expected to dominate. Remember the ECB chairman, Colin Grave, saying anything less than victory would not be acceptable, and they lost 1-0,
right.
courtesy of being 51 all-out in Jamaica, and the West Indies hung on for a couple of Test matches after that. And then just 3 years ago, the West Indies were expected to be steamrolled by a much stronger England team, and England were beaten inside 3 days in the final Test in Barbados for it to finish 1-1. So, yes, they will be favourites, but I think also because there is so much attention focused on England, and I'm talking to an audience in Little England, so there is that fixation with England as well, that England have lost 23 Test matches in the last 3 years.
Mm.
They're on a good run now because they've just come out of Sri Lanka and will be bringing with confidence, and the West Indies definitely will be underdogs, but it's really up to the Caribbean side to, if not fight fire with fire, to stand their ground against England, because invariably, when things start to go wrong for England, they go wrong very, very quickly, and they start to doubt themselves. So that's what the West Indies have to play on. So yes, England will be favourites. I'll pick them at this stage to probably win the series. But again, having said all of that the West Indies, if they play as best as they can and show a measure of fight and resilience to England, they could pull a few surprises.
Mm-hmm. Fazir, thanks for coming through and talking to us. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of your night.
I'll try my best.
All right. So there you have it. The noted journalist Fazir Mohammed being very much a part of Mason and Guest. Let's get back to you now, Jamal. You spoke about the first test. What about the second?
Right. The second, obviously, Bangladesh scored 500-something runs.
A lot.
Yeah. So it's always a challenging total for the batsmen. Total wicket was, in the first 2 days, the wicket was flat, good for batting, but obviously kind of at the end of day two into day three, the ball started to turn, so it was presented with challenges for the batsmen, and once again, I think just went in a negative mindset, and wasn't positive enough, so therefore allowed Bangladesh to warn us, and that was the disappointing thing.
What about you, though? Two matches that you bowled, 75 overs and 4 balls, 30 minutes. You picked up 8 for 196.
Yeah. I think I had a good series. Didn't fulfill all of my goals. Obviously, I wanted a 5 and at least 12 wickets in the series.
Mm-hmm.
But since we got 2-1, it fell short by 4. And also, only one thing I achieved so far on that tour is I wanted to leave it the most wickets for West Indies.
Right.
I achieved that.
Yeah, you got 8 and Bishu got 7.
Yeah.
Gabriel 5.
So that's basically it. But for my personal performance, I'm happy with it. For the team, very disappointed that we didn't compete well enough against Bangladesh. I really thought that we had a good combination, a good team to compete or even win this series. And after we did so well in the Caribbean, I know they was coming for us, and I really wanted us to prove them wrong, because we all knew that they was going to prepare a spinning trap, so I just wanted that to backfire on them.
Yeah, right.
And we used it to our advantage and win the series, but unfortunately we didn't, so we'll come back to the drawing board.
Warkan, what did you learn from watching the Bangladeshi spinners? Because it was quite evident that when they bowled to us, they attacked the stumps and made the batsmen play more. And I found that when we bowled, they had a lot more room to hit through the offside and or to hit with the spin. It just seemed to be a different length that our spinners were bowling compared to them. I mean, do you think that maybe our approach is different, or is it that their style is different and pace of spin is different? Is that why there was a contrast with the approaches?
Well, for me personally, it was bowling straight. That's my style of bowling. Mm-hmm. But I think the huge difference is the approach of the batsmen. Their batsmen are more positive, so they put the ball under more pressure. While we batsmen are more in a negative mindset, so therefore they could settle and bowl and get into their rhythm and get into their groove. That's a huge difference. They say it makes the Bangladesh spinners look a lot better in the circumstance of the game because of the approach of our batsmen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their batsmen are more positive and taking the charge. If you bowl two balls consistent, the net shot is a sweep.
Okay, I see.
So they never allow you to settle.
Oh.
Never, ever allow you to settle. So that was a huge difference in terms of the style of bowling. So it may look like they were bowling better or straighter, however you want to put it, but that's the approach of our batsmen compared to their batsmen.
Interesting. Talk to us about Bangladesh, though. I mean, life in Bangladesh, difficult?
Yeah, you see.
What about the food and all that?
I started life in Bangladesh. You see a lot of poverty, families living on the street. It makes you appreciate what you have at home.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you don't take nothing for granted at all. And for me, I learned not to complain a lot now because as a guy that like to complain about almost everything, I'm very miserable, but this is my second time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
This
is my second time in Bangladesh now. And just the first time it hit me, it lasts about 7 months to appreciate everything. But I think this time is going to last the rest of my life. Every little thing is valuable and also do not complain about things you don't have to, and appreciate every little thing.
Mm.
In terms of the food, different cuisines and stuff, basically same as India.
Mm-hmm.
So I was accustomed to the food I was looking. I was accustomed to the food that I got in Bangladesh because I was in India before, so I wasn't surprised with the type of food I was getting. So basically same thing you get in Guyana or Trinidad.
Okay.
A lot of curry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Didn't get sick, did you?
No.
You didn't put on weight, did you?
No.
Not at all.
I stayed in the nun.
Okay.
Fresh nun.
So lots of poverty in Bangladesh.
Yes, a lot of poverty. When you're driving in the streets, you see the water, the people are bathing in. Like, when the rain falls in Barbados and the water gets black and running down the road, that's the water they're bathing everything and drink.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my golly.
Yeah. And you see you may see a virgin on the street in Barbados or in the Caribbean, but when you see families living on the street, you have to tell yourself,
there's a different
level of poverty that you're looking at, and not to complain about anything.
What about hotels? I mean, they were okay?
Yeah, they have proper hotels. Mm-hmm. We stayed at a hotel named Radisson Blue.
Right.
It was fantastic.
Were you in the suite?
Yeah.
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah. We have single rooms for Western, so...
I know.
It was proper hotels there.
Right. And the interest in cricket, still strong. Did the Bangladeshi come up to watch it?
Yeah, they really, really, really love the cricket. Extreme passionate about the cricket. So they support the team. Even West Indian, they're like, if you're walking across the road, you go on practice, they come out, they want autographs, they want to touch your hand, they want selfies. Mm. Selfies seem to be the new thing in India and Bangladesh right now.
Mm.
So they come to you. Selfie.
So are you going to bring it big time to Barbados? Selfie.
Not even the Caribbean. I like that.
Indeed. So overall, you're disappointed, but you hope to do, of course, better. You're looking forward now to playing for Barbados. You've been selected.
Yeah, Barbados is a challenge right now. We lost the first game, so we have to bounce back as a unit and come better in the second game against Jamaica. So it's good that I'm back in the team to help see if we could win this game, because we didn't start good, so this second game is very important for us, and if we get a victory, it'll boost the team confidence and help the guys to gel and move from strength to strength from here.
I'm going to ask Jamal Smith to do an assessment of course, the two matches. This is a regional program, but you would have covered, Jamal, the Barbados game, of course, against the Hurricanes. The question is, where did the Hurricanes go right? I want you to do an assessment. And where did Barbados go wrong?
Well, now, first of all, I thought the Hurricanes started well from the toss, obviously winning the toss at the UWA and opting to bat first.
Mm-hmm.
It's always very important to bat first at the university ground because generally the surfaces tend to be slow and probably suit the spinners more So obviously batting last, as Marv would say, going into the last day, would be difficult. So Captain Devon Thomas, he called right. And after posting a total in excess of 250, I always felt it would have been challenging for the Barbados team, but I also felt that they could overhaul it. I would have to say the Barbados team batted poorly, especially in the first innings. They were extremely negative, too negative. Obviously, Anthony Allen, as I would have said on radio, batting for his play, but probably, how to put it, overestimating the situation, really, and got himself in a rut. And obviously, when he would fall just about for 30 yards or so, the procession then started. But credit also has to go to Captain Devon Thomas of the Leeward Islands, how he skipped his side. And I found, especially generally, the Leeward Islands, the fields they have set. It almost seemed like they had learned lessons from the Super 50, because they would have played at least three or four games at UWA as well. And as I said before, they played the cricket in front. I wasn't much on the attacking side as far as 3-6 in the gully were concerned, as I say how Barbados was operating in the first innings. And they stuck to their guns. And I know a lot of people say Terrence Ward, his spin is uncomplicated, his off spin. There are no real tricks or devils. But what he did well was he was consistent and he stayed with the plans of the captain. And you could always tell from inside the box what the Leeward Islanders were looking to do, how they were looking to get a batsman out. I didn't necessarily get that feeling from the Barbados team, especially when they were in the field. And you'll have to say the discipline from the Leeward Island bowlers. Then obviously backed up by the captain in terms of field placing. And then obviously they're backing him up in terms of the execution, because they bowled really well. All of the Leeward Island bowlers, even Daniel Durham, who only had the 9 overs, only conceded some 19 runs. So the Barbados never really transferred the pressure. And obviously then in the second innings, Carter and Brooks are two, obviously, are two mainstays as far as regional cricket is concerned. And they never really got going. And what I had admired by the Leeward Islanders again is the way they approached Jonathan Carter. First of all, they kept the left hand spinner out of the equation, and they focused the off spinner with a very tight offside field. It was an in out field, so to speak, because they had to cover the extra cover. You still had the man catching that long off. You still had the man on the 30 yard for the sweeper. And what they were really asking Carter to do was, well, take us on. And you know, from the opposite end, Azari Joseph, when he started at Carter again, if you place it, you could see what they wanted to do. The areas that Azari Joseph bowled, who, for my money, his fast bowling really made the difference. Never mind Terrence Ward with the 4 wickets in the second innings. Azari Joseph was able to break through at critical times. And the way how he bowled at Jonathan Carter, especially, I thought it set the tone for a second innings battle. Again, you're still believing that the Barbados team may be able to overcome the total. But as we would have seen, the batting was so negative. Only the enterprising partnership really between Tevin Walker and Hayden Walsh, just for a moment, you know, transferred that pressure. But obviously then when Walsh left, the writing was already on the wall. But overall, I think the Barbadian team, they batted too negatively. Some people are saying that their guys, they're batting for the players. And that is very interesting as well. And you know, it also speaks to the point, again, I'm asking the question, did we select our best squad, especially based on the resources we had left? There was no X factor, no player really came out there and decided to try to take the attack to the Leeward Islands bowling, and we put ourselves in a rut we couldn't get out of. And we say we as in Barbados, and obviously they paid the price. So credit to the Leeward Islands for playing good, solid cricket, for having good plans, but the Barbados pride, they still will have to feel disappointed at the end of the day, because it was not beyond them, but they certainly did not play the better cricket.
What about Casey Carty?
Oh, obviously, a lovely 100 in the first innings. And again, these are things that we obviously will need to see from our Barbadian batsmen. Casey Carty came up there. Leeward Islands were in all sorts of problems. At one stage, they were just about 80 odd for five. But Casey Carty, he just stayed with it. Albeit he got a chance as well at slip. But that's the nature of the game. You still have to make the 100. And that's what the young man did. And he took his scoring opportunities. When he had to, he played some lovely shots, especially through the offside. And you can see, you will have to say that after his effort, the way then how the Leeward Islands backed up, the writing was on the wall based on how the Barbadian team approached the first innings.
Is there a lack of depth in batting in the Barbados setup? Because, you know, a lot of our players are on international duty, and the team has struggled when these players have been away. Do we have a problem here?
I would say this. You raise an interesting point. The Barbados team for a while has been, in my opinion, getting away because of the quality that they would possess with their senior players. We have one next to us, Shea Hopes, the Craig Prophets. When you say that our resources are a little short, yes, the guys are inexperienced. But pound for pound, if you put or top five or top six against these Leeward Islands, top five or top six in terms of talent or supposed talent. You would never believe that the Leeward Islands would have outplayed the Barbados team. I'm saying to you that we have to have good plans. Barbados need, especially in that first bowling innings, their plans were not good. The Leeward Islands should have probably been bowled up for less than 200, and that did not materialize. And then I'm saying to you, their batting plans, they were not batting as if, like, for instance, there was a particular bowler that they would go after. You understand? No one changed the gear. So I will obviously then have to ask questions about what were the thought processes and who is a part of the think tank of the Barbados team, and why the Barbados team just seemed to be playing cricket. They seemed to be reacting rather than setting the tone. Whereas the Leeward Islands, you could see they had a plan. And to be honest with you, Devon Thomas was never forced to go from plan A to plan B. And I think that's the difference.
And when the captain is not forced in of a season control. A very interesting contribution you made. 434-1790, give us a call, and certainly we'd be very much a part of your program. Of course, you've got a commercial coming up, and of course, we're going to take some calls as well. Somebody told me you're going to England.
All right. good night to Dr. Porter and to my two from the land of the home of champions. Now, I know first, let me just briefly say congratulations to the West Indies team for winning the ODI.
Yes.
And I would move smartly on to my next moment. Now, I know that I can't consider that me and Mr. Eastman, Harry Eastman, is any friends. Or even your commentator, T. Polder. But if both of them are listening, I'll start from this premise. If they can tell me, and this is nothing against UE, that I would like them to tell me how much time since UE would have won the championship and played at UWI. How many fast bowlers had caused them to win on, like, spinners? How many spinners have taken wicket at UE for UE to win their matches playing at UE? That is one. The Barbados team had a tail longer than from WAI to Antigua.
Oh, dear. That's a long tail.
It's the longest tail that you could ever had in cricket. Now, you find it amazing that you could have left out two players, I'm not going to call any names, that should have been in the Barbados team. For the past season, we have never, ever had the boy, Rafiq, Shea Hope, Chase, and the bigger keeper, Roach, and all of these playing at any one time. All right? To say that the big boys were out and the small boy. Most of the time, those guys are out of the squad and you were playing with the average person. Good? Now, you go to UE, a pitch that don't take fastball, don't get wickets. The spinners just get all the wickets up there. You know, Ryan Hines just get 7 and 8 wickets when he started to come in, he played. Everybody is getting, we had a fellow named Austin, Singh, all these fellas, they were the fast bowlers. You can imagine a selecting panel can select 4 fast bowlers and 1 spinner for Barbados to play at UWI. Well, this is unbelievable. My view is that if the BCA doesn't change and get rid of the manager and the selectors and the coaches, the Barbados team is going to come second, between last and second last this year. They're going to come last to second last.
Last
to second last.
That's really done the pecking order, Randolph. You don't have any confidence in your Barbados side?
I am a Barbadian, but you cannot have persons selecting teams like this to represent. We had Barbados had the right going in, they'd won spinner and all those fastballs. That's nonsensical.
Team selection wasn't good at all.
It was very, very, very poor. Because, look, then the two openers, who seemed not to be able to get it together at none of the two innings, then the skipper and carried a bat in the first innings. Second innings, they didn't get it together. So from the time the two of them went, it was good night, George.
Yeah, Ronald, we're trying to get the chairman of selectors, in fact, I'd spoken to him today and he consented to come, but I'm having
You sure he can come? He can come.
Well, I'm having some challenges. Maybe he's busy, he's a
hotelier.
No, he
ain't busy.
He's a hotelier.
I can tell you that he ain't busy. He ain't going to talk.
Oh.
He ain't going to come and talk on this program.
Oh, dear.
I say so. He ain't going to come and talk on this program. He ain't busy.
Oh, dear.
Busy what? He ain't busy. He listening.
Okay.
I say so.
Oh, dear.
And if the right person is listening, they can tell him, who is the boy that said that he ain't busy?
Oh, dear.
And he ain't going to come to the program. But I wish you all a very blessed season.
Right.
And this would be my last call for the year.
Well, sure. Randolph.
And I'll be back, hopefully, all things being equal, next year.
Yeah, Randolph, because when you look at the schedule, Mason and Guest is scheduled for Christmas Day and then for New Year's.
Really?
Yes. What? I mean, Christmas this year is going to be a Tuesday. And then the New Year, of course, so we're going to be away for a while. I'm going to come to England with you, Randolph.
Are you going to make the commentary team?
Which commentary team?
For the World Cup.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they send the best Indian team over there.
Quickly before I go, I must say, though, in all fairness, despite the fact I take Jamal's comments, I think he's a very good analyst in the situation. He analyzes things very well. And,
right.
I take his comments where Marin is concerned. He gave reasons for why he made come to the conclusion that he has arrived at. But I think, in all fairness, I would give he and Gail, now let me say that each one are my favorite, but because they will cause the best thing is to qualify for the World Cup, I think they should be given the nod to go. But none of the rest who just want to go because they hear World Cup should not be allowed to go. But Gail and those are the only two that made themselves available. The rest had all kinds of things to do, right, and they turn up. So that's my bit for the year. And I hear you when time comes around.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.
Good boy.
Yes, okay, I will be. All the best. Thanks to you, 434178. You can give us a call and participate in the program. I don't know, Jamal, if you had any opportunity to look at the England squad. Of course, we spoke to Fazir about that. You expect a West Indies to compete?
Yeah, most certainly. I always expect the West Indies to compete when they're playing at home, specifically so against England. And Fazir Muhammad, obviously, gives good reasons why the West Indian team still should not be discredited or counted out. I mean, you can't dispute facts and you can't dispute history. And the fact remains that we're at home, and I would hope that Warwick Khan, if selected, and the others really put their hands up and give a good showing of themselves. Because as Fazir rightly said, 3 years ago, the West Indies did pack a good punch and finished off with a surprising victory to some. But the fact remains that they're in home conditions. And they believe that once they bring their air game, they'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Jason Hole is so vital.
Yes, he is. Obviously, I think he's ranked third now in all-rounders over the world. And probably 3 years ago or so, there was a lot of discussion and conversation as to why Jason Hole. But he's certainly now putting his hand up with both bat and ball. And he's saying why. And he's also captaining pretty well as well, being a bit more aggressive and tactical. So, you know, his game is progressing nicely. Obviously, we have to see how he goes as he comes back from injury. But his form leading up to the injury, hopefully when he comes back, he should be able still to do a very good job for his side.
Indeed. What about preparations for you now? You know, Jamal, as you look towards your back from Bangladesh, what have you done since you've come back? You've been training hard?
Yeah, I've been in the gym, also bowling and batting. And my preparation would be for this first class game that is playing right now against Jamaica. Use that as match practice. And also during the Christmas season when everyone's eating their ham and the ham cutters, will be training and working hard.
How important is this fitness?
Fitness is very important in any aspect of sport. It helps with your mental strength and concentration in the arena. So being fit is a key to any success as a sportsman.
And of course, you are now looking to do very well in the regional competition and make a statement. The English are on their way to the Caribbean. I'm sure you want to play in that first test match.
Yeah, obviously I would love to be selected to play against England. I've never played a home series, never even been in a squad for a home series. So it'll be my first time if selected. So looking forward to the challenge and looking to perform good if I get the opportunity.
When you look back at your bowling in Bangladesh, do you think that you can do anything different? A little bit more flight, a little bit more guile?
There's always room for improvement in any aspect of your game, but I think probably could have been a bit more aggressive in my field setting. I think we was a bit too defensive at times. Guess I got to fight the ball a bit more, but the type of wickets that they presented to us, it was easy to just bowl quick, and the ball would be turning. So the quicker you bowl, the more turn you was getting. So the flight wasn't really required in that circumstance in Bangladesh, but just being more aggressive with the field settings and also knowing when to attack. I think I had times that kind of the end of day's play, I still had long on and long off sweeper. So in that circumstance, I could have bring the guys in and force the batsman to try something different.
And you didn't tell your captain anything?
No, that's only a reflection. Yeah, that's only a reflection, though.
When you look at the two test matches, the first test, the pitch turn a bit more, was more prodigious with turn from what I can see compared to the second pitch. Which one did you prefer?
The first pitch, it turned from ball one. You was getting assistance from the first boy bowl, the wicket was turning, so I enjoyed bowling the first pitch more than the second one. Obviously, the scores showed.
Yeah, your performance was big on the first one.
No. You got to play against the Jamaicans. That game starts on Thursday. Is that the 3Ws Oval? Do you like bowling at the 3Ws Oval?
I think any spinner love bowling at the 3Ws Oval. I personally do enjoy bowling there. I think playing against UE, I got about 3 fivers against UE playing at 3Ws Oval.
So you're looking forward to that. Yeah. Well, a man who would want to come and play at the 3Ws Oval actually played spin very, very well. I mean, he got a lot of hundreds. Trinidad Tobago's is Roland Holder of cricket operations at the Cricket West Indies. We want to say hello to him. Hello, Roland, how are you?
Hi, Andrew. Good night, listeners.
Good. All right. You've got the first round of the way. Were you happy? I mean, you had 2 matches. Of course, Barbados played against the Hurricanes. The Barbados team lost. And in St. Lucia, you'd had the defending champions, the Jaguars, playing against the Volcanoes. How did things go from a perspective of Cricket West Indies?
Cricket West Indies, from our perspective, well, tournament is underway. Always good to get the tournament off the ground. Perhaps from a cricketing perspective, not always the best before. Don't think we had any centuries, if I recall correctly.
Carty got one.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Casey
batted very well.
In Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you look at the overall scores in the whole first round, 250, 248, Guyana got just over 200 in the first inning. And then thereafter, nobody got 200 in the third and fourth inning. not sure if perhaps maybe it's early days yet. As the tournament progresses, the scores may get better. But from a cricketing perspective, I don't think it's ideal, the scores so far.
I see. But in terms of coverage, I mean, you've got the cricket being streamed. It's on radio. Are you happy with the promotion of the sport?
Oh, definitely. Well, we have been streaming it for a couple of seasons now. So that is, again, on par. So I was able, for example, to go online and watch elements of both games, which is something that we are striving for, to take the cricket to more people. So that is very good for us. I heard the cricket on the radio in Barbados, which was also very good. Didn't get to hear it in St. Lucia, but we also have analysts going to every game, people doing coding for us. So, which we actually pay for. If a team doesn't have a coder, we actually send one.
Mm.
So at least we are providing that information to the teams, the coaches, etc., so that they can hopefully use it to the best of their ability.
Well, let's turn now to England, Roland. Of course, the squad has been announced. When will the English be arriving exactly? What day?
The English arrive in Barbados January 11th.
Mm-hmm.
They then play a warm-up game at the 3Ws Oval.
Mm-hmm.
Then proceed into the test series commencing the 23rd in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
All January, of course.
Yes, of course. And the interest is going to be high. When tickets will go on sale? Do you know?
Tickets are already on sale online.
Right,
we're
right.
Talking about the specific offices.
Yeah, yes, that's what I mean, yes.
Typically, the ticket offices don't open until 2-3 weeks before the actual event.
Right.
So very early in the new year, you'll get tickets going on sale in Barbados, if not just before the end of the new year.
And you expect good crowds, I would imagine?
Yes. From all reports, sales have been going very well so far. So the online sales, tour operator program. So, yes, usually England to the Caribbean is a big event. And this year, next year, we don't expect it to be any different.
Indeed. Well. In terms of the head coach, I mean, we've been hearing lots of talk. I mean, is it true that Richard Pybus is the new head coach? Roland, do you know? Has he spoken to you?
Well, Andrew, what I will say is that whether I know or not, when CWI is ready to make an announcement, they will. So my saying yeah or nay isn't really going to help the situation any. So whenever a decision is made and when it is ready to be communicated, I'm sure they will communicate it.
When do you expect that release to come? Has anyone spoken to you about that?
Andrew, when the release comes, I'm certain it will come after everything has been tied down, whether it's Tom, Dick, or Harry. Whether it's contracts, whether it's negotiations, whether whatever has been finalized, then that announcement will be made.
Yeah, Dr. Andrew Ford, who knows you very well, told me that he heard that Richard Pybus has gotten the job. So you want to share that information with Roland?
Roland, what's the 11 that the English team is expected to have the practice match against? Will it be select 11 or...
It will be a CWI 11.
Okay.
So whether it's whatever we call it, whether it's the President 11, Ford 11, whatever 11 it's called, it will be a representative side.
All right.
It will give the players the opportunity to who have done well in the first class season thus far. I think they would be 3 rounds completed by then. An opportunity to show the selectors and to put themselves in line for selection, I would think, because it's a pre-test series. It's a pretty England are in the Caribbean for 2 months.
So are the English expected to be training at the 3Ws, or will they be using any of the other local grounds other than
the practice facilities? Will be 3Ws Oval and James Smith Oval.
I see. Roland, finally, you come home for Christmas. Is Barbados still your home, by the way?
I'm between both places, Andrew. So yes, I am.
When last were you in Barbados?
It may surprise you to know, but last weekend.
Oh, last week. Oh, yes, you said you heard it on the radio. Yes, in fact, both radio stations carried it, and that was good. Of course, it's important to get radio. You know, radio is where we started. Remember, the old people used to have the little radio up, you know, in the ears and the cane fields and all across the Caribbean. Listen to radio. We did it as well. And I think radio is important. Yeah. Yeah, little transistor radio. And radio fusion, if you were, of course,
old
in those
time
days.
Old-time
radio.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I think you may have young Warwick in there. He may not be.
No, he wouldn't know a thing about that. Not at all. No.
but just so you know, there are a couple of things young Warwick has that Dr. Ford and I are very familiar with.
Oh, indeed. All right. Thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. It's always a pleasure. And we'll hear you again soon.
Okay, all the best, Andrew. All the best.
Right. Well, earlier we were trying to get Hendy Wallace, the chairman select. We have not been able to get him, but we've been able to get the president of the Barbados Cricket Association, Mr. Conde Riley, who was with us last week. Hello, Conde. How are you?
Not too bad.
Okay, good. Where are you, Conde? Can I ask? Are you home?
I'm on the road.
Okay, you're on the road. Wonderful, Conde. Now, talk to us, first of all, about the Barbados game against the Hurricanes. As president of the BCA, you must be a bit disappointed.
Let me just park on the side of the road.
Okay, take your time. This is live radio, Conde. We wouldn't want you to get into any trouble. Are you in Black Rock? Are you in where are you, Conde? Where are you? Are you in Black Hall, Conde? Are you in Bayfield?
That's not your business.
He's on the road.
You just forced me to pull over into somewhere that. I'm not breaking the law.
No, not at all, Conde. Well, that's the power of Mason and Guess. Now, just talk to us, Conde, about the Barbados performances. The BCA president, you must be a little disappointed that Barbados lost to the Hurricanes.
Well, the BCA, the Barbados Pride, it sits with a situation where across three formats, I look at cricket differently. And there are not many franchises that can lose 11 players. In fact, only today, Sheehope, who is what? I was born on 9th of November, he's born on 10th.
Mm.
But I always remember his birthday. He scored 146 not out of 144 balls.
Mm.
There's Watson Chase up there, with Kimar. So we lose 7-8 players a year.
Mm-hmm.
It gives, I am about development. Not only winning, Barbados has won, I think, about 45-46% of the cups since. Cricket in the Caribbean was sponsored.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of young cricketers in the West Indies team. So we will be disadvantaged. But how I see it is, and I think we're magnanimous about these things,
mm-hmm.
this gives opportunities to younger players
right.
to showcase their talent and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So winning is not all. If we are full strength, I think that we can win every cup that is played.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so.
Mm-hmm.
But we are a part, we are shareholding Cricket West Indies, and we would lose a lot of players, but we should still compete.
Mm-hmm.
I was away, as I told you earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a Cricket West Indies board meeting in Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't see the game. I am disappointed when we don't win, but I as I said, it's a bigger vista.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I welcome the opportunity for these youngsters. Just before the tournament started, and I told you this last week,
mm-hmm.
the guy spoke to them, and it is a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all about winning. We will win, and this is the first game. I remember a year, we lost the first game, and we won the cup. Big
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, Conde, let's look at the meeting you had in Trinidad and Tobago, of course, Cricket West Indies.
I hope you don't ask me any inappropriate question. Huh?
No, but I never do, Conde.
After every lesson, cricket board maybe put out a release.
Right.
So if that's where you're going,
mm-hmm.
I beg you, don't ask me things that have not been put out by Cricket West Indies.
Okay.
I heard you earlier today talking about who's coach and all that kind of thing.
Mm.
What I didn't hear you say is that it is an interim position.
Oh, so you're confirming that Pipers is interim? Is that what you confirmed on it?
But I said so last week that whatever we do, would be interim, as
right.
you know. And let me go back over it again. Shortlaw resigned, and he said he was going to the end of the year. Then he said he wanted to go at the end of November.
Mm-hmm.
Within 3 days, we were leaving India to go to Bangladesh, Andrew.
Right.
I don't want any laughter or any nonsense, so
mm-hmm.
I will leave.
Mm-hmm.
It is time we take this thing seriously.
Right.
Understand how decisions are made.
Right.
It would have been impossible
mm-hmm.
to go through a process to get a permanent coach. So we were looking at the best possible situation. Okay? We do not want to give anyone a poison chalice.
Okay.
We want to go through this process and ensure that we have that when we make a decision, and I can say this as the chairman of the HR committee, we have made a conscious decision
mm-hmm.
that we will develop the Caribbean coaches
right.
that in time,
mm-hmm.
one of them will be at the level
mm-hmm.
to become the senior coach.
Conde,
I said it, just a minute.
Okay. Right.
I said it before. I say it again.
Right.
Of the last 14 coaches we have had,
mm-hmm.
Caribbean coaches, based on the attitude of players, the attitude of some leaders in CARICOM, where players will walk. You know, there was something at Providence with a former president of Guyana, walking around the field with a player.
Right.
We are going through a process. We have made a conscious decision
right.
that it is time to develop West Indian coaches to the level to become head coaches, not only for Red Cricket West Indies,
mm-hmm.
but for world cricket. Okay?
Right. Conde, can
our
I ask
decision a... is that in, at this particular juncture,
right.
India, Bangladesh, we can't rush to go out to get the best possible coach.
Right.
But what we decided is that we will develop, and if you look at it, Henderson Springer right now has been a very successful team coach.
Right.
He's now the head coach of the women's team.
Right.
With him, there's Wadi Estrick.
Right.
I have great respect for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them have been very integral part of Barbados' great development over the last 10, 15 years. At the men's team, we have Rory Cullimore, the bowling coach,
mm-hmm.
and we have the batting coach as Floyd Reefer.
Right, right.
A slapdash thing there, everybody gets emotional.
Right.
I say, oh, pick a West Indian coach. We have interest from various former players and so on.
Right.
We are going to go through the process. We will not hand a poison chalice.
But Conde,
we also want the players to understand that attitude is important.
Right.
We can't develop a guy at 2021, and the next thing you go on a little and you see him playing T10 and T20 cricket. We need to get all players to understand what cricket means to Barbados and West Indian psyche.
Mm-hmm.
That you must give back something.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just run it. We have given a window to the IPL for all of our players.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the Caribbean Premier League. We have under 19 players and so on be selected by the franchises. At the end of this particular episode, all of our coaches, that coach the franchises, former players and so on, will be given an opportunity to be interviewed to coach the West Indies senior men's and women's team. Already, Henderson Springer has done a great job with the women.
Right.
He has with him Roddy Estrick. So you can now question me.
Right, okay. Can you confirm, Conde, that an interim coach is in place?
West Indies will put out a communique
right.
to all the journalists in the Caribbean.
Right.
Our meeting ended late on Sunday.
Right.
I came back yesterday. I had to go and make sure that Kent Oval is being, you know,
right.
restored and so on. And a communique, it would be inappropriate to meet for me to speak before the communique from Cricket West Indies.
Yeah, but okay, fine. I mean, but there's nothing
There's no but, Andrew.
No,
but.
Okay, all right.
When you spoke to me today, you told me you wanted to talk about the Barbados situation.
Yes.
Right.
And
now,
we did...
to go off into asking me what transpired at the Westminster Ballroom before the communique comes out,
right,
is inappropriate, Andrew.
Okay, fair enough. I just want to say to you, Conde, that noted journalist Reg Pereira was on radio today. I don't know if you heard him, but he was on radio. Right, but he's on radio. It was in the sports news saying that Richard Pybus has been appointed interim coach of the West Indies, and that assignment will start when the English come. Can you confirm that, Conde?
Andrew, what did I just say to you? I do not want to not speak to you. You spoke to me about one thing. Now you're asking me to speak to something
okay. That
I will not speak to. I just told you that.
Fair enough. Okay, fair enough, Conde. I respect
what I said to you.
I respect that, Conde.
I want everybody within the earshot
right. Of
this program.
Right.
Cricket West Indies is committed
right. To
having a regional coach. There is a process, but we have England coming here, arriving in Barbados on the 11th. Of January. When Stuart Law, I repeat, told us he was leaving, it was the end of December, then he decided the end of November.
Mm-hmm.
If a guy does not want to work for you,
right. You
let him go.
Right.
We were traveling to Bangladesh in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
A suggestion was made by the director of cricket, Mr. Adams,
mm-hmm.
and we concurred with that. We had a meeting on the weekend in Trinidad.
Okay.
We have made certain decisions,
right. Which
will come out. Whatever decision we are making now because of the constraints of time
right. Is
an interim
decision.
I do not know what Reg Pereira said.
Mm-hmm.
I have not spoken to him.
Right.
Somebody may have told him something,
mm-hmm.
and everybody likes to scoop and elite. I am not of that ilk.
Okay.
I am not. And I know I take this very, serious.
Okay.
I do not laugh when I'm speaking about it.
Fair enough, Conde. Fair enough. We're going to move on. I think stay with us because there are a couple of other things that we want to talk to you about.
Not a problem.
So we leave that there. Now, in terms of Kensington Oval, rugby was played on the weekend. I'm sure you had an inspection of it. How was Kensington?
As I arrived in Barbados yesterday, I went straight there.
Now, what happened when you... What did you see at Kensington, Conde?
Well, I'll forward to you on WhatsApp tomorrow. We are working.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in a bad condition.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have an inspection. I'm confident that Prof will have the pitch in good... Unfortunately, we didn't have rain.
Right.
And I've always said, and I continue to say,
mm-hmm.
all the BCA wants
mm-hmm.
is a window for cricket. I believe that they spend $100 million of taxpayers' money, not anybody's, not any politician's money or the BCA's money,
mm-hmm.
that facility can be used prudently and wisely,
mm-hmm.
but it is primarily a cricket facility. It is one of the best in the world. But we need to have that little window so that the BCA does not have to continuously
mm-hmm.
spend money for remedial work.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of money, scarce money that we have for cricket development, system, and so on. If we can sit down and work together and give the window for cricket, after cricket, let me just say something. We won the women's senior competition. We have a competition we are supposed to host now coming up. We have to make sure that in that period there is nothing that will preclude us from allowing our girls to represent and defend the regional senior women's trophy at Kensington Oval. If there is another event, it could compromise. What we are dealing with now is media work.
Right.
To make sure that Barbados benefits from the thousands of English people that are coming, not only for the test match, but the 2 one-day internationals.
Right.
To have rugby, listen to me very carefully.
Yeah.
Rugby 7 over 2 days. If the rain had fallen.
Right.
You know what that would have done in terms of our ability to host in the future? We don't have a test match alone. We have 2 one-days.
Right.
We have put the warm-up games before the test match at 3Ws. Barbados moved their first 2 games so that we could have a proper preparation of Kensington Oval since VW is Oval. The first two games. So the next game starts on Thursday or something again.
Right. Against Jamaica.
But listen to what we have to do. Listen to what I have to do. Cause I want people to understand what
sure.
we go through at the BCA.
Sure.
Not only right, the BCA board.
Mm-hmm.
It is said after the abandonment of that test match in Antigua that a match has to be played at the venue. So we have the first test on the 23rd. Because mm-hmm. we had to move these two matches to the GWs, no match would have been played. We had to work with Guyana. We were supposed to go to Guyana for the third game. We have now gotten the permission of Cricket West Indies and with the approval of the Guyana board that Guyana will come to play the third game at Kensington. So we will get in one game
okay.
before the test match. This is a prerequisite. And when people talk, they do not understand
mm-hmm.
what the ICC demands.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of things that the Barbados Cricket Association goes through. They just say, oh, righty do this and righty do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, all we want to do is to work together mm-hmm. to ensure
right.
that what Kensington Oval was built for,
mm-hmm.
that it can satisfy at all times. Test matches, with the attendant foreign exchange. I mean, you know what will happen when that test match starts to play in Barbados in terms of the restaurant, the hired car owners, the mm-hmm. hotel owners. I mean, people selling craft and so on. How do you compromise with rugby sevens? I make no apology to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
We had no problem after the parade. Everything was okay. Then we had the Hennessy, no problem. But then last weekend, heavy rain had fallen.
Mm-hmm.
The BCA.
Would have been in...
When the inspectors come down, and I want people to be tolerant.
When do you expect
listen
the
what I say
just one thing
is not right.
No, just one question. So when is this inspection? What date is Kensington going to be inspected? What date? Come day? We got 3 minutes left
ready.
On the show. Okay.
We will be ready.
Okay. So you're saying at this stage you have despite some challenges, you'll be ready and the test match is going to be hosted in Barbados on the 23rd. Is that what you're telling everybody?
That's not my call. When the inspector comes here, we will be ready.
Ready.
I can't say that the inspector would agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that our ground staff, Pop Edwards and the Andy Davis, work started. I can forward to you a video of where we are
right.
today.
Right.
But it means a lot to Barbados. It means a lot to our economy.
Right.
I make no apology to anybody. I say the BCA needs to have a window where there is nothing that could compromise a bid that we won to host a test match. England arrives on the 11th of January. We have the first test, and then we have 2-1 the internationals. I may be wrong. I am just saying, give the BCA a window. Give us that window,
mm-hmm.
and we can think. And when we are finished, crop over, everything can happen. Everything can happen. I don't think it is unreasonable for us to ask not to compromise, not to compromise that sort of revenue, that mm-hmm. sort of pride that Barbadians have of hosting a test match on a pristine Kensington Oval and then followed by the first 2-1 international. If I am wrong, I will walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I say it is untenable that we have to cross my fingers
mm-hmm.
that no rain would have fallen last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you say they would stop the rugby and run off the field, that should not happen. I make no apology to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It is wrong.
I'm calling in the minute we got left. Have you spoken to the minister and the prime minister about this? Have you spoken to your good friend, Prime Minister Motley? I know you're good friends.
That's inappropriate. I think that obviously they all know
mm-hmm.
what this test match means to our economy.
Right.
And I would have been speaking to all the ministers that are involved in you know. The economy,
right.
The prime minister, she was very upset because she had said that should not happen. But it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, no rain fell.
Mm-hmm.
And I promised her I would give her a day every day.
Okay.
And I can send to you
mm-hmm.
a video of what the work that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise all of Barbados that we will be ready.
All right.
There are two things to fix this, money and the human resource. Have I got rain? Not me, but the BCA has to bring
But we are responsible for that. Another 100 people to get it ready.
Right.
Peter Storm from Westmoreland, he does the aerating and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We will get it ready because it means a lot. And this is not politics now.
This is.
It means a lot to our economy. It mm-hmm. means a lot to Barbadian pride. Time England played at Kings Oval, we beat them. Do you recall?
Yes, yes, of course.
And we're not afraid.
All
okay?
right. But Connie, we got to go. It's always good listening to you. And hearing you, of course, Conde. So thanks for coming through and talking to us on Mason and Getz. All right,
thanks.
So there you have it. The president of the Barbados Cricket Association, Mr. Conde Riley, making some pretty interesting comments, of course, about the whole question of the selection of the head coach. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Dr. Ford, you were very quiet when Conde came in. Thank you very much indeed, Jamal. We wish you well. Get some wickets and play against England. And, of course, Jamal Smith, thanks for coming in and talking to us. I'm Andrew Mason. It's open for a bye tomorrow.